Long Island has a food insecurity problem, and the pandemic has only made it worse.
Frankly, poor people can do better in South Carolina than they can in South Hempstead.
Paul Patcher heads Long Island Cares, a nonprofit that runs the Harry Chapman Food Bank. He says many people were leaving the region during the pandemic because they just couldn't afford it anymore. The largest food bank on Long Island estimates that nearly 350,000 people went hungry during the pandemic. That's according to their analysis of a new nationwide study from Feeding America.
You're listening to C19, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut, New York region.
Coming up, New York is moving ahead with several criminal justice reforms, an update on the South Fork wind farm, and the future of the Metro North post-pandemic.
I'm Bill Buckner.
And I'm Sabrina Garone. Democrats who lead the New York State Legislature will move ahead with several criminal justice reforms in the remaining weeks of the 2021 session. But Republicans say the measures go too far and claim it will contribute to the rising crime rate across New York. Karen DeWitt has more.
Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay says the crime rate in major cities in New York increased in 2020 and that concerning trend is continuing in 2021.
It seems like every morning we wake up to see another story about violence in our streets or a shooting where innocent victims are either killed or injured. And with these horrific headlines, it's not a surprise New Yorkers are wondering, what's being done in Albany? Sadly, absolutely nothing.
The rate of violent crimes is up nationally as well, though not as high as in earlier decades like the 1980s and 90s. Some political leaders and law enforcement officials have attributed the rise to increased societal tensions during the COVID-19 pandemic, the closure of key services that could discourage people from committing crimes, and a lack of adequate gun control laws. But Republicans in the state legislature place the blame on the recently enacted laws approved by Democrats in the Senate and Assembly and signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo. They say ending New York City's controversial stop and frisk program and the elimination of most forms of cash bail has led criminals to take advantage of the changes to commit more offenses. Assemblyman Mike Riley is a former NYPD officer who now lives on Long Island.
Their policies have created what has essentially become a revolving door for criminals.
Republicans also oppose a measure known as Clean Slate. It would expunge some criminal records for those who've already served their time in prison. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Offshore wind developers have slightly scaled back their plans to build the South Fork Wind Farm off the coast of eastern Long Island. WSHU's J.D. Allen reports the project still does not sit well with fishermen.
Developers Ørsted and Eversource say they will reduce the number of wind turbines they plan to build from 15 to 12. The turbines are slated 35 miles off the coast of Montauk Point. Those waters are centuries-old fishing grounds for fishermen from Long Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. The developers have offered fishing groups compensation packages for lost earnings expected during the construction and operation of the wind turbines. A recent deal offered Rhode Island fishermen $12 million, but the Fishermen's Advisory Board in Rhode Island and the Long Island Commercial Fishing Association urged their members not to take any deals. They warn offshore wind development could devastate and reshape the fishing industry without more research into its impacts. J.D. Allen, WSHU News.
Ridership on the Metro North hasn't quite bounced back post-pandemic. More on the future of the railroad in just a bit, but first headlines and a message from C19 supporter.
Support for C19 comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
All Connecticut residents and New Yorkers over 12 are able to get the vaccine. Residents can receive their first dose without an appointment at most state-run sites, though appointments could still be needed for second doses.
Connecticut residents, you can schedule an appointment by visiting ct.gov/COVID vaccine or call 877-918-2224. New Yorkers, you can schedule an appointment using the Am I Eligible app or by calling 833-697-4829. U.S. Representative Lee Zeldin of Eastern Long Island is calling for Governor Andrew Cuomo to end all mask mandates for school students. Zeldin, who is seeking the GOP gubernatorial nomination to run against Cuomo, held a rally outside of Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone's office in Hophog today. The state has lifted its requirement for children ages 2 to 5 to wear a face mask in daycare settings and similar measures at summer camps.
The Connecticut Public Utilities Regulatory Authority says two of the state's largest utilities will start to decrease their billing to electric customers starting next month. Eversource customers can expect to see their bill reduced by about $9.50 a month. United Illuminating customers will see their monthly bills decrease by $9. The COVID-19 pandemic decimated ridership on the Metro North Railroad, Connecticut's main artery to New York City, leading to extensive service cuts. Riders still haven't fully come back, and some experts are using the crisis to look for ways to rethink transportation in the state. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports as part of a partnership with the Solutions Journalism Network.
Before the pandemic, trains ran twice an hour along much of the New Haven line during off-peak times. Now they only run once an hour, but even though there were fewer trains, they can still be crowded. So much so that a conductor had some concerns at a press conference in Stamford last month.
All we've been asking for is more service. We can no longer practice social distance on those trains.
Connecticut Transportation Commissioner Joseph Gialetti reassured him.
We know what our ridership is at. We are projecting and hoping that what you're seeing right now on the highways is going to happen on the rails as well. And as that happens, we will adjust.
But Metro North still has a way to go before it's rebounded from the pandemic. Jim Cameron is the founder of the Commuter Action Group.
Before COVID hit, Metro North was standing room only on rush hour trains. It was a seller's market.
Fares kept going up and demand kept going up too.
Connecticut was a feeder to Midtown Manhattan. The trains were jammed and commuters had very few alternatives. COVID has taught us we don't need to do that.
Ridership plummeted during the pandemic at its lowest to less than 10% of its original levels.
And those people were people who had no choice. They were first responders. They were healthcare workers. They absolutely needed the trains to get to their jobs. To their credit, Metro North was there. They kept service going.
Now more people are riding on weekends, but a lot less are riding during the week. Weekday ridership is less than half what it was before the pandemic. Cameron says the reliable daily commuter has still not returned, and he worries they may never return.
Many of the commuters who have gone back to their offices are driving. Traffic is getting back to the old normal.
Cameron says commuters also want faster trains and lower fares. That solution may be as simple as restructuring the timetables.
So rather than having a train run from Grand Central nonstop to Stamford and then make every local stop all the way to New Haven, have it run in zones. Maybe they have the first train stop in Stamford, the next stop will be Bridgeport. And the train that follows it might pick up the intermediate stops.
And to pick up the load, maybe an old counterpart, the regional bus. Doug Holcomb is the general manager of the Greater Bridgeport Transit Authority. We meet at the Bridgeport bus station. Buses leave this hub to run along streets throughout Bridgeport and its surrounding towns, like along the coast from Norwalk to Milford and up into Bridgeport suburbs like Trumbull. Holcomb says the bus had its own rider hemorrhage in the early days of the pandemic, but the bus's core riders, the everyday folks, didn't go away.
Frontline workers, healthcare, grocery stores, those folks still continue to ride. I mean, there's a lot of riders here that don't have an alternative to the bus and don't have the option of working remotely.
Some routes continue to have high ridership, like Main Street in Bridgeport and the Coastal Link bus.
We trimmed some routes that were down to one or two people, some of the Suburban Commuter Express, and we kept those buses queued here for overflow buses. If a driver called and said, look, I got 15 people on the bus, we sent another bus out on that route.
Now, like Metro North, the GBTA is starting to look at whether some of those route changes should be permanent. The bus is more flexible than the train. It's a lot easier to redirect a route from one street to another than to build a new track. And it can move as population centers change.
The important thing about the future is frequency and reliability, and bringing people to the region who can come here without their car and live and work right in the region.
People like John Garnett. He's a lifelong bus rider.
The whole point of having a great bus system, especially here in Bridgeport, is that you can connect the local rider just within a couple hundred feet from their home or their place of business so that they can get where they need to go, as opposed to having them only rely on a train or only rely on alternate forms of transportation like a network transportation company, Uber, Lyft.
But Garnett worries the current bus might not be enticing enough to bring in the transplants from other urban areas who are used to more frequency and variety in routes.
Everything is fragmented, but if you want to go further out of the city, your options are a little limited.
So buses are trying new ways to encourage people to ride. They're waiving fares on weekends through the summer. Commuters can also join CT Rides. The program lets them build up points for taking public transit in exchange for rewards like restaurant coupons and tickets to live shows. But Garnett says there's a stigma against public transportation that's specific to Connecticut. He says you can look at how lawmakers decide to fund transportation projects, and there's a clear preference toward cars and drivers.
If our local elected officials keep up with the trends of who's moving where and how they're riding, as opposed to just arbitrarily making highway improvements without sidewalks.
GBTA President Doug Holcomb says riders contribute a lot, but transit services can't exist on fares alone.
Our riders are like your sustaining listeners, right? They pay for about 30% of the operation.
Holcomb, like other state transportation officials, says federal funding is critical to keeping public transit afloat. They're counting on President Biden's $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan, but that's just for the short term.
The future of the agency and the funding and the service that we have on the street depends on an increase in the ridership and a declining dependence on federal investment, because that's temporary.
Holcomb says a lot of Bridgeport's regular bus riders are college students. Many don't have driver's licenses yet, and local colleges and universities are convenient to the city's bus routes. Unlike many other daily commuters, college students will likely be returning to classes this fall in person. They'll need a way to get there, and Holcomb hopes they'll choose the bus. He says they'll know this fall if that's enough to make the bus a permanent solution to the state's transit gaps. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
This story was made with the support of the Solutions Journalism Network, a nonprofit organization dedicated to rigorous and compelling reporting about responses to social problems. Additional reporting by Janice Roman.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. C19 is supported by Hartford HealthCare. I'm Bill Buckner.
And I'm Sabrina Garone. We'll talk tomorrow.